Hi guys, welcome to the Art of Travel podcast. Today I'm excited to share a conversation with Yolanda Jimenez of Yola Mezcal. Yola grew up in Mexico City in Oaxaca, where she made frequent visits to her grandfather's agave farm growing up. In college, she left Mexico City to study feminist theory at Cambridge, where she learned one critical concept, that employing women significantly uplifts communities. In 2016, Yola launched Yola Mezcal with her two business partners, musician Licky Lee and chef Gina Carell Aglietti. In this conversation, we chat with Yola about her travels, what it took to launch a spirits company in a male-dominated industry, and how Yola is not just a brand, but a community. Here's Yola on the line. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time out to record with me.
No, thank you, Olivia. It's great that you thought of me. I'm excited.
So where in the world are you right now?
I'm in Mexico City.
And what has the pandemic been like for you?
I mean, it was, I think, one of the most complicated and difficult years of my life. Without a doubt, there was a lot of change and restructure. I've been traveling so much for years, and I'm very accustomed to spending time with my friends and interacting with people. So it was a very sudden change, but I appreciated the time to do certain things that I usually don't, like we all did. And also spent a lot of time with my closest friends and with my partners, Gina and Nike. And I think we've always been family, we've been friends for a really long time and have this company together. But I think being in the same place during the pandemic made us grew closer. And I think that was one thing that I'm grateful for. But of course, having so much pain around everywhere is... It's
hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's really beautiful. And I'm happy that you found time to deepen some connections. I also find that that's been a blessing throughout this time, is really deepening connections with the people closest to you.
Yeah. I think hopefully everyone had an opportunity to do that. And I think we've never had a situation like this in our lifetime. So you didn't stop and think. I don't think we would ever have that opportunity. So I think that's great if we do that collectively too for the sake of the world.
Exactly. And before we dive into all of the different things that you're working on and you're doing and you've created, I wanted to take a few steps back and learn a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up?
Well, my whole family is from Oaxaca. My parents met there, and I spent a lot of time in my childhood there. But I grew up in Mexico City, and I consider myself from those places, but also very, very much from here, and I love it here. I've been away in the pandemic, and then I came back recently for Christmas, and I didn't realize even how much I missed it. Definitely is my favorite place in the world, Mexico City.
And did you ever leave Mexico City, or have you stayed there this entire time?
I left when I was a teenager for a few years to go to school, and then I studied abroad in university. And I feel like left almost 8 years, probably, in a lot of my formative years outside of Mexico City, a lot of time in England. And then I came back when I was 24, almost 24. And then I've been living here since then, which is like 12 years now. But I always travel a lot and go back and forth. And I spend a lot of time in LA and New York.
Where did you study?
I went to Cambridge University, and I studied women's studies.
That's incredible that you studied women's studies. I feel like that makes sense given all of the things that you do around economic empowerment for women. Did you know what you wanted to pursue professionally when you were studying there?
Not exactly. And I think at the beginning, I really wanted to be an academic. My mom is a an academic, and I grew up around books, and it was something that I was very interested in. But then very early on, I started, in school, reading about the actual difference or the practical implications of just very specific changes in women's lives, which is direct pay. And I became a lot more interested in the practical aspect of things rather than the theory. And I realized, reading all these wonderful people who have done great work before trying to change the structure of society and women's lives, that you need very few changes to make a profound difference, not only in women's lives, but in a whole family, a whole town, definitely countries. So very early on, I knew that I wanted to go back to Mexico and try to come up with a way of implementing that somehow. And I thought about mezcal, but it wasn't necessarily something that I was thinking at the moment. But my grandfather grew up in a mezcal town. And it happened that when I was on break finishing school and came here, he got sick, and I got to spend time talking a little bit with him about the things that he liked. And I just thought about doing something that's been done in Oaxaca for hundreds of years. And in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of a lot of people there, it's such a Oaxacan way of life, mezcal, that working with that would be wonderful. And I was close to my grandfather, and I think it was something that he would want too.
Yeah, that's really interesting. How did you get into the mezcal business? Is it through your grandfather?
Growing up in Mexico City, everyone knew what mezcal was, but it really wasn't something that you would find everywhere. And it became popular when I was a teenager. I think before that it was, you know, there was maybe one place that you could find mezcal. And then I think when I was around 15, there was a place that opened in Condesa where you could find artisanal mezcal. But for the longest time in Mexico, which is, I'm sure you know, a very classist, racist country at the end of the day, mezcal was considered a peasant's drink from a very poor state in southern Mexico. And the south of Mexico is mostly an indigenous population. So and Mexico is still really divided between the white industrial world in the north and the Indian states in the south, which, of course, Oaxaca, Chiapas, are the most important ones. So there was always a classist connotation that you were drinking a peasant's drink, that you were drinking something that wasn't clean.
And I'm so curious, what contributed to the renaissance of mezcal becoming something more on trend now?
I do feel like it was, from one moment to the next, there was a generation that's a little bit older than me. I'm close with a lot of them, and I think we owe so much to what they started doing. It's just a generation in Mexico City that wanted to feel proud of a lot of Mexican things. Something that I talked to Gina Enrique a lot about. When I was a kid, Mexico was going, I mean, it's, of course, still is a country ravaged by violence, sadly. But growing up, it was institutionalized and very dangerous. And the world news has always been of Mexico being a drug-infested, narco country. It was difficult to reconcile so much of the beauty that we had growing up here with the rhetoric that you were hearing all the time. So it felt very complicated, and it made for a lot of people in my generation that had the opportunity to try to live abroad and study and have different opportunities, thinking that it would be somehow a better way of life. Completely disagree now. I went and I spending and have lived in different places for many years. I believe the quality of life in Mexico is very high, the quality of people, the kindness. The structure is not necessarily an uber capitalist place, which I really enjoy. And I think we all really missed a lot of the warmness and tradition. And so when a lot of people that were living in places, or people that became adults, wanted to have projects that were based in Mexico City, that were based on art and tradition and food and so many things that we have, then I think it was an explosion. And some restaurants opened, galleries, and we all knew each other and hang out and became friends. And mezcal really became a part of that immediately. And people started recognizing it and coming to Mexico City, and bars started opening, and all these restaurants started trying to get really good quality mezcal and handmade, organic, something that was Mexican and just delicious.
It sounds like the way that mezcal is made, too, is definitely for a more enlightened, conscious consumer. I was reading somewhere that mezcal can only be created in limited batches or quantities. Is that what differentiates it from industrialized tequila?
Yes, yes, definitely. Industrialized tequila, for the most part, can produce a great deal. And I think tequila, it's been on an incredibly fast growth outside of Mexico for the past 20 years, too. And it was also done in the north, in Jalisco, which is a state that has always money and had a version of industry. Oaxaca never had any money, even though it's the same thing. Tequila is mezcal. Oaxaca never changed any of the methods of production since when the Spanish came and brought the distillation process. So it's pretty much been untouched in rural places for 300 years. You have different recipes, make completely different mezcals depending on what type of plant you want to use, how much water. Every mezcalero comes with a different process. So you would have a different dish and a different type and small batches all the time. These towns are very small and they still live. I mean, I was very impressed when I had gone with my grandfather to his town and his farm. But going again in my 20s and realizing that they lived in old structures where one family would own a piece of land where they would plant corn, usually beans. They would have a small version of animals. And a lot of them, or the great majority, would have a small mezcal farm or palenque, and they would make their own mezcal for their family and their personal consumption.
Is it like in Oaxaca, the origin of mezcal is very personalized to each family that lives there?
Yes. It's a part of their life as your grandmother's recipe is ingrained in their everyday life. And you have mezcal for all special occasions, and kids grew up seeing how it's made and training to make it. And yeah, it's definitely part of everyday life.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I had no idea the traditions behind mezcal. Did it originally come from Oaxaca?
Yes, I mean, it came from Oaxaca, Puebla. Oaxaca is the state where more mezcal is produced because it's the place where there's more agave. There's something like over 200 different types of agave there. And you can make mezcal from at least 16 different types that grew up wildly. And there used to be a lot. There's still a lot, but we have to take care of it. But so every small town in the mountains regions and in the south of the state really started making mezcal.
When did you start your own brand, Yola Mezcal?
When my grandfather died, I knew that I wanted to do something with his little farm, which was very small. My idea was I want to bring mezcal back to Mexico City. That's very artisanal, small batch. Just try to learn more, see how everyone makes it, the different regions. So I spent months kind of driving around the famous mezcal towns, trying to meet as many mezcaleros as I could, and learning the different process. And I was completely blown away by the complexity, the different regions, all of the ways that it was done. It's really hard to explain. This is something that has happened to me with every person that I've taken to a farm in Oaxaca. You don't realize how everything is done by hand and how much time it takes until you're there and you realize how rural these towns were. There was no machinery, so it just, you could see the beauty of people doing things by hand and in a family. And I was very impressed and moved by that. And my immediate thought, too, was, there are so many women working here, being part of every single step of the process. At the end of the day, if you really wanted to really ask about techniques or specific recipes, you would always be referred to a man. I thought that transition, which seemed very strange to me, like you could see, and it became sad reality for women that you can really see their actual work behind everything, but then they don't have any of the voice.
This actually leads me to my next question, which is why I find your story and your brand and everything that you do with your mission so inspiring is that economically empowering women is a big mission focus for you. And why was this an important feature when you were developing your brand?
Being in school and understanding how an entire society can change just by putting certain things in women's hands, like absolutely having economic independence from their spouse or access to birth control, completely changes society. Something that we barely give to women now, not to mention even private property or access to education, you know. So seeing this in Oaxaca and seeing it so clearly and wanting to do mezcal and loving it and seeing the potential that it could have and seeing that it was something that people there, my people, where I come from, so proud of something that was being done there and they have been doing it for generation after generation. If I could marriage that with a way where women can understand that they don't only work, but they're a part of and they have a voice in it, would be fantastic. And if we can, on top of that, get economic independence and for them to understand the value of their work and eventually make it so that it's clear that it's as valuable as a man, then hopefully we can, even if it's just a tiny change with one brand in one small town in Oaxaca, then it would be way better than if I wanted to keep being studying in England and become an academic who wasn't going to change everyone's lives except mine. I knew very clearly that I wanted to do something practical, that I wanted, even if it was just that, to make that small impact. And Gina and Lika, who are good friends of mine, I introduced them to mezcal and I was telling them about my ideas. They immediately said, how can we get together and make a plan? We all want to do something that has a practicality way beyond the little things that we've been doing. And that's how we want to grow up and be women, a brand together. And we want to make a brand that speaks to women in Oaxaca, but to speak to women in Sweden and to speak to women everywhere. Because we do have a sensibility that we can all talk about. And no one's, especially, you know, 10 years ago when we really started doing all the structure of the brand, people weren't, there was no skinny margarita, there was no Me Too movement, there wasn't any of that. And we were told, like, oh my God, you guys are going to do like a girly alcohol? What? And I'm like, no, we're not girls, we're women. And we want to be able to all make something together. So that was always been the drive behind the brand from day one.
While you were building your brand, did you encounter any gendered stereotypes launching a liquor brand?
As much in America, I have to say, than in Mexico, which Mexico I was expecting. And I feel it definitely has changed quite a bit, but even my grandfather was a big macho. And in places like Oaxaca, where that culture is still alive and well, and the, you know, the hierarchy of the family hasn't changed. I was, when I first started saying that I wanted direct payment and how I wanted to have a brand that we would all together, I was looked at with suspicion, for sure. They were quite condescending at first. And they were all of the stereotypes. They were like, well, you're young, and if you want to do something with girls, and it's like your girl's project, it's okay. I think everyone didn't think it would grow to anything. I think my dad was very supportive and really helped me talk to all the men in the town at first who didn't take me seriously. And what took is just sticking to it. There's a lot of brands that started, disappear quickly, or have ideas, and there's brands that have come with money that have stayed. We started this brand with the three of us savings and the way that we wanted to do. And what we did is just we sticked well with one group of women, doing it little by little for years until like after 6 years of being there and showing up and having the same structure, then people start to take us seriously and understand that it really works when you have conversations with people, when you don't go and buy a juice but become part of how it's done, when we are a collective, they own the farm the same way as we do and they're part of it. And we talk about the necessities of everyday's work with them. And they choose their hours and the ways that they want to live. And that became so clearly for them and for the people around that it was such a better way of making something in a way that it was how they were making it than just people with money from America or Mexico City showing up in Oaxaca and be like, hey, how much for their mezcal? I'm going to put it in a cool bottle that, you know, this guy designed, which is what 99% of mezcal brands.
A lot of brands launch with an abstract customer, but I feel like with Yola Mezcal, you guys really built it from the ground up, starting first with the community, first starting with your Oaxacan community of women and expanding it to a larger global community of women in different types of creative fields.
Oh, yeah. No, and then I think once we had that, we were ready to export to America, and we decided to also start very little because we didn't have the budget, so we would go ourselves to restaurants and to talk to people that we knew, etc., with like little mini bottles that we would have. And they made fun of us pretty much. Distributors were like, what are you girls doing? Like, this is not, it's like, oh, like a little, like, what? Girls and a mezcal brand? And the stereotypical distribution kind of structure in America of these, you know, guys who they were just like, oh, that's cute. We had a lot of that. And what really made a difference is that we went and started speaking directly to bartenders and chefs. And they loved the story and they understood that mezcal was handcrafted and they wanted to support what we did. So instead of going to the establishment of a distributor, we started selling directly and getting support from small businesses and restaurants. And that's what made the brand grow. And the support of women specifically, I mean, a lot of men have supported us and been incredibly kind and great. But so many women immediately were like, you know what? Yes, we're going to do this. We're going to tell my friends. We're going to host a party. We're going to buy it. How can I talk about it? So many women were ready to get behind that idea. And I think women were just tired of the rhetoric, especially in the alcohol world, that we're just either the date, the dumb date or the pickup or, you know, dumb girl. I really feel as a way that we all united and started listening to each other and realized that all of these things that we thought we could never change, like this idea of a powerful man that can never be taken down, did. It happened. So now I'm excited of like what are we going to do with those possibilities and that information and knowing that we can all support each other.
Absolutely, especially now that there's proof of process that we can dismantle systems. And that's really interesting that you guys approach first the artisans, like the cocktail makers and the chefs specifically, rather than going through this funnel system that maybe has nothing to do with the artisans themselves. Did you have any experience in launching brands or companies prior to starting this?
No, neither of us have ever even had a business of any kind. We never quite saw it as a business like that, which is also refreshing about having women in positions of power. That even if it's just a small change, it is a change that can end up being important. We didn't set up and sit at a table and like, okay, how can we make money about this? And then how are we going to... We ended up having to work with people that helped us structure a business, of course. The inception of the brand was never that. It was really naive in some ways. Saying like, we just want to take this product, we want to work with women in Oaxaca, and we want to take it here and do it our way.
And I think there's something to be said about your partners also being women, because maybe perhaps it is some sort of feminine energy to give back I think I read something that you wrote where you mentioned you found a statistic that when you employ women, 80% of the income goes back directly into their communities versus when you employ men. And do you think this is just like a concept of being a woman? Like it's the nurturing, it's the wanting to take care of people that is just so innate.
Completely. And I think it's so innate because culturally, we are brought up very differently, men and women. Hopefully that will change. And I think we're making important steps toward that change. And I very much believe that it shouldn't be this way because I don't necessarily think it's like a intrinsic of the world. It's just culture. We are brought up differently. So women are taught and have a different sense of community and taking care of and are the ones that have been bringing up the family and the children. For the great, great majority of the world, it is very much that. So a woman takes care of everything in a community. You see it everywhere. My experience with every woman is how women, you constantly see them taking care of things and nurturing. Yeah, which is so important. And we also never have the spaces where we want to be even doing something else. So when a man gets a dollar, the chances of them to do whatever they want with the dollar are infinite. And for a woman, a lot of the space is still in their home taking care of things. And so a dollar goes to food, to clothing, to schooling, for the family, to house, housing things. So it completely changes the economical system of a town when you pay a woman directly. It becomes healthier. It's been statistically proven in many, many different places in the world.
Have you read Melinda Gates' book, The Moment of Lift?
Yes. And I thought it was great. I was a little skeptical at the beginning, and then I loved it.
I really loved it as well. And this was not like something I studied in university, but I think one of the biggest takeaways reading this book was that when you isolate 50% of your community or your population, which are women, you are stripping away 50% of growth, innovation, and all these other things that women are.
Completely. I think it's astonishing, even if you give just one small opportunity, how everything changes within a few years. This is the thing that I find really interesting. I think money shouldn't be an end. Money should be just a way to achieve different things. I think the world becomes a bad place if we start thinking of money as just this abstract concept that we have to get. Which I'm against. But if you think of money as a way for women to have opportunities to do something else, then everything changes. Something that I very early on started talking with the women in Oaxaca was that the idea that, and this is something that men still very much have, is the idea of control. And that's what money has become so important. And that's what men are so adamant about keeping women away from it is because what are the possibilities that of the world would be if you actually give women a chance? They're very scared of that. But then with $1, women can start doing things, and a lot of it goes back to the family, which is important and great. But then what about after, if it's 80 cents of a dollar, then what about the other 20? What if there's art and dreams and opportunities there also for women to do so many other things? I'm really interested in that. So that's what they were always like, there were people from outside that wanted to come and give us charity. We never want that. And this is something that people in Oaxaca are so proud. They hate charity, especially this idea of like the rich places or people from Mexico City or foreigners just come in with money and be like, oh, yeah, you guys do like these really nice baskets and ceramics. Or mezcal is interesting. And this is a version of, instead of equality or respect, is charity. What goes behind that is that in charity, there's control. There's hierarchy. So what we need to change is the idea that there's a person controlling how you're going to make your own choices. That's what charity is not important. Employment is important. Opportunity, giving women just 10 cents of a dollar to be able to do something else, something they can decide for themselves. Giving them a space that's out of the regular structures that we've had for 2,000 years in this culture. If we are able to do that, which I think it's really happening with a lot of women's lives, then the world would be a different place. And it's going in that direction. And I think it's scaring the shit of a lot of people.
That's really powerful. So I wanted to ask you about Yola Dia. Can you tell me a little bit about Yola Dia, your festival?
But it came out of the idea through the years and meeting bartenders in the communities. And we also try to work at supporting women in institutions in any way that we can, like making cocktails. And we always try to donate and work with the ACLU. We never throw a party just to like have or... We always make it about something that we can talk about as a brand. So we've met so many wonderful women and people. And through Lique, we got approached by Live Nation, who said that they thought that what we were doing was interesting, and they hadn't been a female festival in LA in 20 years, and that they haven't really been a female festival in a long time, and they really wanted to do something small but focusing on that. And we said we would love to do it if we get creative control of the whole thing, of who we can invite and how it's going to be part of it. And they said yes, which was incredible. It goes to show how the world, it is changing a little bit after all of these things that we've been talking about. So we decided to make a festival that was that had none of the regular structures of femininity that we've been hearing about. So it's just how you identify them, to have every type of music and every type of woman and every type of food and have artists. And that was the basic idea. And we started calling our friends, and it became just a great group of people that wanted to help and be together. And it was really queer, and it was young, and it was random. But it just felt different than any music festival that you've been. Everyone was just very relaxed, and it had a loving energy. It felt that you could move as a woman very differently.
That's really interesting. What role does art and culture play into the brand narrative?
Oh, I think because it's I do believe that it is that art can really change language. I think supporting a new way to see the world is very important. I'm not sure I'm able to express what I'm thinking, but I feel that if we want a new world, we all need to get together in different aspects and try to talk about it and express it. And I think that's what art does.
Yeah, it's like your brand gives you a platform to have these types of conversations that pushes culture forward.
Yes, complete. I mean, I think the brand is our ability to speak to as many women and people and to try to come up with different ways to do things in every possible aspect that we can, because we live complex lives. We're not one part of a thing. Our lives are about other people and about how we eat and about how we spend our money and the things that we want to focus on, and then the conversations that we have and who do we decide to support. And I hate when people say lifestyle brands, because I don't understand necessarily what that is. What I do think is, like, for me, my everyday experience with my brand is not like how do I make 4 bottles of mezcal, or it's everything else. It's what the women are saying, how we're going to build our new farm, how we're going to make it green, how we're going to make sure that everyone feels listened and secure. Who are we going to meet? All of it is so important and so real. And I think the more that we see that, the better a brand is, the better the world is, and the better our everyday life is. We can't keep separating things and thinking it's going to be okay. We're like consuming the world because that's how we think things are, and it's wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I think it's like providing a holistic experience of the different universes and like language experience that you want to translate, I guess.
Yeah, I think. And I mean, this is also what's so what's interesting about having a brand that's run by women is that women are accustomed to seeing things in a multi-utilitarian way. We are, you know, we have children and we're cooking and we're talking and we're getting together and we're taking care of a house. We can do many things at once, and we understand that life is a combination of so many things. So I think it really, we are very built like that, and that's what this brand feels so alive all the time. We're like with meetings and people. It's because we really believe in a structure that can include as many things.
Yeah, as multifaceted as women themselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yola, I think this conversation is really blowing my mind, and I know I'm going to start thinking about a lot of the concepts that you've just mentioned for like long after our chat, because I just didn't realize how gendered some of the experiences are, and also just the way that you talk about operating the business and like the community aspect and the nurturing certain areas and places. It really does feel like how women pursue business is completely different from how men pursue business. And you're right, perhaps it's because women are so multifaceted and they are the caretakers in their home. And now they're also the providers as well, that we have this, not biological lens, but social conditioned lens to be able to apply all of ourselves into everything.
Yeah, I very much believe that. It definitely has been my experience working with so many women.
So I want to talk about all of the different places you've lived in, because I know you've traveled quite a bit and you've lived in many different cities all over the world. And how has traveling and living in different cities inform your views?
I think a great deal, because when I was younger, I was like, if I could go anywhere and you can interact with any human being, and it doesn't matter where you're from, there is many ways in which we can connect, which of course is true. And I have friends from many ages and places, and I love having conversations and meeting people everywhere in the world. So it's something that it's been incredibly enriching, and I value very much in my life, and I feel so lucky that I've been able to do it. But with time, I've been doing it for so long, I also realized the importance of where you grew up and the importance of that place feeling safe and important and valued, which is why I want to come back to Mexico and make sure that the people in Oaxaca feel that. Because once you have that and you feel proud of certain things, and you know that you can do things, and whatever it is that you're doing, we have a place in the world, that immediately creates a value, and you start feeling like you live in a third world country. I think I really went to England thinking that I came from a third world country, and then I realized that that was their measurement, not mine. I thought it was a universal truth. So I think that what's great about any experience in life is that it shows you, the more that you have them, the richer you become as a person, and the more that you can broaden your vocabulary and your conversations and your understanding of every other human, the better. And I think that's what exposure, that's what culture, that's definitely what art gives. That's what I want to bring, all of these things to the women in Oaxaca that don't have the opportunity to leave their town most of the time. They haven't been able to afford it. And then, you know, of course, you need a great deal of money to travel. You need a visa to come to America, which they can never get. You know, it's like all of these things. It's the class system in the world is dreadful, and we should do everything that we can with the privilege that we were given to us to make it accessible to everyone else, not to keep it to the fewer lucky ones that we are. So that's what I'm thinking now. How can I bring things to Mexico from all the places that I've been?
Yeah, how to cultivate everything you've learned from all of these different cities and experiences you've had and bring that knowledge home. That's really wonderful. And what has been the most formative trip you've taken?
All of those first travels impact your mind in such a way that you never forget them. And I think, like, this probably is going to sound a little pretentious, but the first thing I thought was, I remember when I was about 12, my mom took me to New York, and we went to see a feminist video art show at MoMA. And I remember understanding what art was, because I've seen, like, I had been to the Louvre and things like that, of course, but I never knew that women could make art. And it would be weird. I had no idea that that was a possibility. And I remember thinking that women, I was like, wait, women can make videos? So I think that impressed me for the rest of my life. Yeah.
I'm so curious if culture, like, of course, conditioning, social conditioning too plays a role, where if you grow up and you only see women mostly as, like, artisans who don't receive credit, it's natural that that would be the view.
And, I, you know, also in a country where the only female artist that you would hear was Frida Kahlo, which now is national treasure, I would say, for everyone else. But I remember growing up, people were still, they would disregard her, and Diego would be considered way more famous and important and part of the university and part of the museums and cicadas and people like that. So Frida was always the wife, bisexual, kind of lesbian, feminist wife. It took a long time for people in Mexico to say, like, oh my God, Frida is fantastic. And it, a lot of it came from foreign influences. So when I really discovered, I also remember the first time I went to Frida's house was actually quite close to where I grew up. And understanding who she was completely blew my mind. I think it's an incredibly important thing that we have that in Mexico. And it has become, you know, I think it's one of the most visited places in the country, Frida's house. And I find that incredible. She's from Oaxaca, her family, indigenous, and quite open about all of this, and, you know, a world-renowned artist. I remember that.
Yeah, she was a modern woman in every sense of the word, in terms of, like, her views and her, or not her title, but the fact that she was able to create a name for herself as an artist in a time where there weren't a lot of female artists.
No, and the way that they lived, and that whole generation of artists in Mexico that created a different form of culture is so important now. And I think it's great. Definitely after finding out about that, I realized I wanted to live a very different life.
And what is one place that's left a lasting impression on you?
I feel like everywhere that people have access to live a little bit differently than the structure of the 9-to-5 life, I always find it's so tangible how, in my opinion, happier they are in those places than in places that have such a structure of work. So any place that's a little bit chaotic, I enjoy very much. You know, I feel like even Paris has that, Berlin has that. There are so many people that are just have a space for Italy, for having a coffee, and for, you know, a long lunch and for a drink at whichever time, and there's space for dancing in a general way. You know, all of Latin America is it's like that. And I feel like, I mean, I hope this is not controversial. I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but I think places that are very dominated by religion are very difficult. I think they don't leave a lot of space for for different ways of life.
Life, yeah, I could totally see that. And I would love to learn, what projects are you currently working on?
We're working on a new farm that I'm very excited about, because we've built and grown my grandfather's farm up to now where we produce, but working with the same group of women for 10 years now, we've talked about how we want to grow the brand, and we've never had the money or the production where we be able to really build something from scratch. So we're starting now, and we've been working on it for about 8 months with my favorite architect, this genius woman, Cofrida Escobedo, who works with spaces in a different way. She did the Serpentine Pavilion in London, and she's very interested in taking what's the classic Mexican architecture and changing it a little bit. So instead of, or approaching the project as we're going to have a mezcal farm and a production facility, we're like, let's create a space where women can come and work. The second part can be a mezcal farm. That's okay. That's easy to accomplish. And there's a few of those. But there has not been a space in Oaxaca. Can really think of a space in Mexico where it's been really thought from the beginning as a place where women can move in a way that makes sense. So we're doing workshops about how can that work, and hopefully we can start building.
That's incredible. I can't wait to see how everything turns out, and I hope you share some of those processes.
Yes, absolutely. I think the idea is to try to document it as much as possible, and anything about it that's successful that can be implemented in the future in different ways or other brands, I think would be great. That's the goal.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Designing a space with the needs of the community first, and how that interacts with architecture sounds really fascinating. And last but not least, what do you find most rewarding about your work?
Oh, that I get to talk to women every day, to the women in Oaxaca, to my partners, to all the people that work with us. I feel like I talk to about 20 women a day. I love it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to answer all of my questions, and I'm really happy to have you as a guest on the podcast.
Thanks to Yola for joining us today on the Art of Travel podcast. To find Yola, you can find her at Yola Mezcal on Instagram or on yolamezcal.com. Tune in every Tuesday for a new episode on the Art of Travel podcast. Subscribe to the Art of Travel podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you may stream your favorite podcasts. The Art of Travel is created by Olivia Lopez, produced by Bon Weekender, edited by Jason Stewart, and music composed by Slow Shiver. We'll see you on Tuesday.